Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
You guys.
In 2025, babes.
Can you believe it?
Yowza.
Crazy.
Our little archive of episodes have years 2022, 2023, 2024, and 2025 now.
Which is absolutely fucking bananas.
Banana pants.
Crazy.
But how exciting.
How exciting. Fun. How amazing that we get to hang out with our listeners in like 70 plus countries and thousands of you every week that we just want to pinch your little cheeks and boop your little noses.
Yeah. Consensual little nose kisses. You know.
Did you guys do anything fun for New Year's Eve? We told you to be safe.
I did.
Trust that you were.
I know we had good New Year's Eves apart.
We did. I know we weren't. She was not my New Year's Eve kiss.
Regrettably.
Unfortunately.
So sad. I had a really fun time. I got to see some friends in Boston. I got to play some board games. It was good.
I love that.
Yeah. And then the most healing part of my year happened, and that was screaming Taylor Swift's You Belong With Me on the car ride home. So,
as you should.
Thank you. It actually has revitalized my entire being. So
I love that.
We really started this year off right. How was yours?
We did hibachi.
Yeah.
So we, I don't know if you've never been, it's like the big grill and then you sit around the grill and then they cook in front of you and it's fun and there's like, it's kind of like a show and then there's a lot of like sake involved. So like pretty much need to wear a poncho to go because you get soaked. But we went with a group of either, it was either 10 or 12 of us. So, and I think you need that big of a group to go. It's just more fun.
Yeah, it is.
We've never gone just the two of us just to hibachi because it just seems like not enough. Like, because you're seated with other people. I don't know.
Yeah.
We had a big group. It was a lot of fun. Delicious food. And then everybody came back here and we watched the whole Times Square thing and just could not believe all of those people willingly wear diapers and stand there and freeze there and can't go to the restroom. And then, like, if I got proposed to and we were both in diapers, that would just be kind of shitty.
I gotta be so for real with you. The idea of being in Times Square or any of that for New Year's sounds so fun for approximately, like, 45 minutes. However, the idea of getting there, and yeah, the diapers, whatever else y'all are doing to relieve yourself. Because I don't know about you, but I have a tiny ass bladder, so that would not work for me. That all sounds like a lot. But more than that, leaving afterwards?
Hell no.
Hell no. No.
No.
I'm out.
Nope.
I'll see you never. I'm actually going to die there. Thanks. Like, that was my last New Year's Eve. I'm not dealing with the crowds leaving. I'm overstimulated to death.
I could give so little of a shit. I barely watch it on TV, let alone would pay the probably thousands to stay in a shitty hotel around there, to wait in the lines for public transport, to be packed like sardines with people you don't know who are probably all sick because it's the winter.
And drunk as a skunk.
And then stand for hours to look at like a crane drop something. I'm like, I can do that literally anywhere.
Also, I can do it in warm houses alone or close to.
I had leggings and fuzzy socks.
Fuzzy
and
socks.
A comfy shirt and had my makeup did.
Yeah, you did.
And then
looking real cute.
Got to be, you know, home.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I will say, I think the only way I would ever do that is if I had a friend who lived in a high rise around it.
Mm-hmm.
So we could be at home.
You go on
and
the balcony.
Watch that. Yeah.
In your pajamas with a glass of wine. You say, here, here.
And I then say, you leave. Cheers. Okay. And the glass door that slides here, that's soundproof, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's not. It's New York. But, you know.
Correct.
So I loved my New Year's. I hope everybody who went out and got crazy loved theirs. Clearly, it's not our jam, but
we like to
celebrate.
Of course.
We are so happy to see you guys here this year with us.
Yeah.
Another one with our favorite people.
I know.
And more of you than ever, which is so exciting.
We do. We feel so grateful that we get to hang out with you every week. And just like the messages that we get and the emails that we get, it's just, it's very sweet. It makes us want to keep doing this. We have a lot in store for you this year.
Yeah.
You'll have to stay tuned to find out about it, though, you little rascal.
Needy. You want to know all our secrets, don't you?
Don't you?
Don't you? In due time, babe.
In due time. But we're not there yet. In fact, I have a case for you today.
Tell me more.
Well, I think you have a thing to do.
Oh. Yoo-hoo! Pod's on.
Yeah, it is. Hi, hello, and welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, Time for True Crime. If you can hear, my cat Mia is telling lots of stories.
Hi. Beanie.
Thank you for hanging out with us in our little corner of the true crime world.
Aw.
If you like what you hear, we think you should follow, rate 5 stars, kiss a kitty on their cute little head, tell a friend to listen to your favorite pod. We are not at all biased. I'm just saying. You know because you clicked it, but Abby does not know that today we're covering the Slender Man stabbing.
Ooh, spook.
Yes. Very spoopy. We have some warnings that I will get into, but to let you know that this case revolves entirely around 3 12-year-old girls.
Wow.
You've been warned that it contains children, violence, mentions of child assault. So if that is not what you are up for today, we will see you in another episode.
You got to do what you got to do. Take care of yourself. Our little ATFTC fam wouldn't be the same without you, but I am a little bit jealous you guys get the out.
Yeah, no, Abby is stuck with me entirely. Sucks to be her.
Not too bad.
Before we jump into the case, a quick highlight of my sources today. I used several articles from Biography, People, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Newsweek, Chicago Tribune, CBS News, and more, as well as I watched an interview by ABC News, Bailey Sarian's episode on the case, and court testimony from Law and Crime. Fear not, the sources are always linked in the show notes.
Every damn time. You could also, in those, find any of our socials, always the sources that we use, and of course, our Instagram if you wanted to send us your pod pets while you're listening.
Which we would absolutely adore.
I would happy cry about it. Be the first pod pet of 2025.
Yeah, be the first pod pet of 2025.
Okay, sorry.
Anyway, our case today begins in a suburb of Milwaukee called Waukesha, Wisconsin in 2014. Morgan Geiser and Peyton Lautner became fast friends in elementary school. I should mention, Peyton's middle name was Isabella, so if you look into this case, you might see her referred to as Bella.
Okay.
It might have been what she had gone by at that time, but I don't know if that's what's preferred, so I'm going to call her Peyton. But if you do look into this, you might see both. It is the same person.
Okay.
Peyton noticed Morgan sitting alone at lunchtime and pulled up a chair next to her, and the pair ate together. Because Morgan had a lot of difficulty socially. She didn't really have any friends. And Peyton did all right. She could hold her own. But she saw someone sitting alone and didn't want to see her sit alone.
Aww.
So she just decided, okay, we're friends now. And kind of took her in. From then on, these girls were joined at the hip. They had similar interests and were into some of the same dark, spooky stuff. We're talking elementary school here. So, of course, they played dress up and make believe. And they both loved cats and girl, same. And they bonded over that.
Relatable.
They went roller skating and had sleepovers, and they just did all the things that kids should be doing.
Yeah. Cute.
In the beginning, the girls mostly kept to themselves. I would say that they were probably a bit younger emotionally than the other girls in their grade or the other girls that were their age, but it did begin to shift a little bit. See, when Peyton and Morgan hung out, they had fun. But the shift happened in 2014 when the girls entered the 6th grade and Morgan met a girl named Anissa Ware while waiting for the bus.
Okay.
Now, I will say also here that Anissa is often called Anissa.
Okay.
By most things that I look at. And it is spelled A-N-I-S-S-A. However, I did hear her talk about herself and she said Anissa. So
okay.
I assure you, I did my research. I read it entirely as Anissa the whole time in my head. So if I call her that, my apologies. It is Anissa.
Love. Good to
know.
But
regardless, Morgan met this Anissa at the bus stop and they became friends. And at that age, a friend group of 3 is tricky.
treacherous even.
Someone is usually left out. Two are closer to each other than anybody else, and there's a lot of room there for feelings to get hurt. We're all little shits at that age, from like 10 to 14, 15-ish. I wouldn't want to meet me again at that age either.
Oh, hell no.
But at that age, you kind of tried to figure out a bit more of who you are. You're a bit more self-conscious, perhaps anxious about how you're perceived. You feel awkward, uncomfortable. Add in the hormones and mood swings and feelings for your classmates. And then the cherry on top is 2014 is social media. And duck faces and peace signs and like sepia filters and long Facebook posts and late stage MySpace. You get it.
Yeah.
Tough. Consider all of these at play when the duo became a trio and Anissa joined their little group.
It's kind of already reminding me of Skylar Niece.
Similar.
Yeah. Very similar. Dynamics shift a lot when you add another person. Yes,
I would argue that we're talking about significantly more mental illness here.
Okay.
That we're going to get into. And I think your psych background and perspective would bring a lot to this case.
Okay.
You'll know it when you hear it.
Probably.
As Anissa and Morgan grew closer, Peyton seemed to flourish a little bit more socially with other kids. She came into her own. She caught up a bit more with her classmates in terms of like the maturity and social aspect. She wasn't really the youngest one, if you will, anymore. But
got it.
Morgan and Anissa were still very much just to themselves. And you'd probably have called them the weird kids.
Okay.
The trio was still intact, though, but it was changing. And it's just that no one knew just how much it would change. Anissa and Morgan had something new and exciting to bond over. Maybe you've heard of him. Slenderman.
Oh.
What an odd time for our generation.
What a time to be alive indeed. Yeah.
Truth be told, I think I can speak for both of us that, I mean, at least for me, I was a little too old by the time that this kind of hit where I grew up.
Yeah.
And I mean, then that 2014, I was older than them. So I didn't buy into it the way that like some of the younger kids did. But I do remember the yeah. younger kids buying into it more and believing it.
I actually was working at a camp around this time that this became popular, and it was very popular with the younger campers and like one of the favorite spooky fire stories that you tell, you know?
Of course.
That we had to be like, yeah, shh.
Exactly. Yeah. Because yeah. There were some that knew it was, you know, just kind of like a folklore right. joke. We'll talk about where it started, but it's actually crazy to me how many kids just genuinely took this as truth.
Yes.
I listened to a Morbid episode a long time ago on this case, and something that stood out to me, one of the hosts said that it was kind of like the Blair Witch Project, and I had thought the same exact thing, where when Blair Witch came out, it was marketed as found footage of people who went into the woods looking for the Blair Witch, and then it was edited and like edited for release, but you could see what they saw.
Right.
And there was no disclaimer in the beginning to say like, this is dramatized. There were genuinely people that believed that the footage that came out in Blair Witch was real.
Right. That it was like a documentary.
Yes. That it was yeah. like as close as what we would probably call today as a vlog. I mean, the movie was essentially homemade and incredibly inexpensive to make, all things considered, and was an industry shocker. Real people thought the movie was real, and it was shot in such a way, again, more vlog style as we'd call it now, but viewers were startled because they thought, holy shit, look what happened to these poor people. I'll never go in the woods again. I can't go anywhere without having something to protect me from that. I'll never right. camp. Like, some people knew it wasn't real, but then there were that subsection of people that you're like, hey, you believed that?
Yeah.
But it happened. And the Slenderman lore has the same feel to me, because funny enough, Slenderman was born out of a creepy Photoshop competition where Ed Knudsen, under the username Victor Surge, posted Slenderman to the online forum Something Awful in 2009. That was not a forum I had frequented, but it was very common for these kind of like creepy things to be posted and like have little like competitions. And so
yeah.
the goal in this competition was actually, it encouraged the participants to take an everyday photograph and make it creepy or make it paranormal.
Okay.
So For Slender Man, the photo was a black and white photo of school children playing outside.
Yeah.
And he edited this tall, sleek, dark, faceless figure lurking in the background.
Got it.
Super creepy. Did the job. Believe it won him the competition. But it snowballed into something so much bigger.
Yeah.
Because it caught on. And then the lore developed that Slender Man would abduct children and take them away. That he had these tentacles that would reach out and grab you. That he could cause amnesia and read your mind and talk to you. That he lurked in the woods just taking children. And that he was faceless so he could be anything you wanted him to be.
Right.
Or worse, anything you didn't want him to be. An ambiguous, androgynous, anonymous monster.
And that is such a terrifying concept, especially when you're a kid and you are in those stages where you have a hard time determining real from fiction and what is my imagination, what's a memory, what is real life, you know, all of those things that everybody has to work through developmentally anyway, to then have mixed in with this, like, oh, and also you're the specific target for this.
And not only that, but I mean, Slenderman had taken on this story of its own, really, where it was like on Creepypasta Wiki, you could read about him, and then there was the Something Awful, and then there was a YouTube series that somebody made about Slenderman. There were documentaries, there were like video games all about it. So like, it really did snowball.
Yeah, it became like a phenomenon.
It did.
Yeah.
And it had just purely started as some guy being like, what can I enter to try to get in this competition? And people were like, that's really scary. What if he did this? What if he had this? Which is exactly what made Slenderman even more unique, was that the lore shifted depending on the storyteller.
Right.
Because there really is no true origin story, if you will, like there are with a lot of other lore, if you will.
Yeah.
But there's so many layers and versions that exist in different places, and no version is more true than another. He really takes on your deepest fears, and the motives are unknown because, again, it just, whoever tells it decides it. With all this Slenderman talk, Peyton was a bit freaked out. So Morgan and Anissa really dove into this and thought it was fascinating and wanted to learn all about it. And Peyton is like, that is so scary.
Yeah.
And Peyton did what most 12-year-olds would do. She went home and she told her mom about it. And she said, Morgan and Anissa were talking about Slenderman and that he can come get you in the woods and that he can talk to them and that he, you know, kills kids. And if you don't listen, he'll kill your family and all this stuff. And Peyton's mom had to calm her down and tell her, no, it isn't real. So then what did Peyton do? Again, what any other 12-year-old would do, she went to them and said, my mom said it's not real, so can we talk about something else, please?
Right. Don't worry, you guys. It's fine. It's not real. It's fake.
They were like, oh, it's real.
Oh.
So Morgan and Anissa doubled down, taunting Peyton that Slenderman was going to get her.
No.
And the divide began to widen. Peyton made more friends outside of Morgan and Anissa, and those two were still in their own little world. But soon they came up with a plan. The girls had a sleepover May 30th to the 31st at Morgan's house. It was Morgan's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Or at least that's when she was celebrating it. And she was allowed to have two friends sleep over. Normally, cool. There weren't a ton of sleepovers, but for this occasion, this was allowed. That night, Morgan and Anissa made jokes about Slenderman. Peyton was not a fan, but they just continued to do it. The next morning, Peyton woke up to find that the other two were already awake and downstairs having breakfast.
Oh.
Which, to me, that just sucks.
Yeah.
Just as if you were of the three, the other two are very clearly closer and better friends, and they're leaving her out. They could have grabbed her, woken up, or
waited.
Literally anything other than, like, have her find her way downstairs in someone else's house, which is awkward when you're a kid to, like, come down and be like, oh, is there breakfast? Like,
yeah.
It's just uncomfortable.
Where'd you go? Yeah.
You know, you might not know your way around the house. You might not know if it's okay to go down. You don't know where they are. But she could kind of, like, hear them joking and laughing downstairs, so she figured it out.
Aww.
But she was the last to know and the last to get there, so that kind of set the tone.
It always feels bad.
They had gone roller skating the night before, and then they had breakfast, and then Morgan's mom agreed that they could go to the park. Morgan really wanted to go to like this local park that wasn't too far.
Yeah.
And Morgan's mom normally would go with them. She'd never let Morgan go to the park by herself. They're all 12, but she figured it's the daytime. There's three of them, you know, giving them a little bit more independence that she felt was earned, and let them go. Once at the park, the three girls ducked into one of the restrooms where, out of nowhere, Anissa hit Peyton's head into the wall.
Whoa.
Out of nowhere. Morgan then walked away and started talking and singing to herself and wandering around. Anissa then told Peyton to go check on Morgan because she was behaving like that, and Morgan had to be pet like a cat to calm down.
Oh.
Pet like a cat to calm down. Because Morgan watched Anissa hit Peyton's head into the wall and then started just singing.
Singing?
Like wandering around singing and talking to herself. So that distracted Anissa, and Anissa told Peyton, hey, go check on Morgan. And Morgan's like, well, I have a headache now, but okay.
Yeah.
My words, not hers, but what the hell? And again, Morgan was kind of behaving oddly like that, so they had to pet her like a cat, and she calmed down.
Oh.
And as we'll get into here, there is a lot of mental illness in the story, so much, and it's terribly sad to see what these three young girls experienced. They are 12, and if you saw a girl do this when you were 12, what would you do?
I'd probably cry.
Like, that is freaky. Yeah. It's, you'd call it weird. You might tease her. Like, kids can be awful, but they also don't understand. And what you don't understand is scary.
Right.
And we react to things that kind of freak us out and make us uncomfortable in different ways. Not always the right way.
You have to learn.
So I figured, like, if that were in a classroom setting, that would really set the tone for the day, I think.
Sure would.
But Peyton is just like, well, okay, that was weird. That they hit my head into the wall.
Right.
But also, what is she to do? She doesn't, like, she can't call her mom to come get her. At least, I don't believe so.
Right.
I feel like she probably would have done that had she been able to. And she's with them on a walk. Like, I think she's just trying to go along to get along. She's not provoking anything. She's just trying to
get
through the day. Probably really looking forward to when they go back to the house.
Well, and Morgan is now acting kind of weird, but it's her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, I don't want to mess that up. And mm-hmm. also, clearly they're closer, so you kind of want to get along with the group.
Right.
I don't know what I'd do.
Because it was Morgan and Peyton that were friends, and then Morgan and Anissa that were friends, and then Anissa and Peyton did not
really get along.
Did not seem like Anissa was a big fan of Peyton at all.
Got it.
Probably you could tell with the whole head hitting.
I would surmise, yeah.
Of it all.
Yeah.
That could do it. But then they said, you know what? Let's play hide and seek.
Oh. Okay.
And Peyton is just going along with it at this point. Obviously, she was shocked, but again, think she was trying to keep the peace. I mean, what else could she do? She can't drive home. They're supposed to stay together. They agreed. They told Morgan's mom that they'd stay together.
Right.
Anissa tells Peyton that she should lie down and cover herself with leaves to hide from Morgan. Because Morgan was going to be the seeker. So Anissa and Peyton were to hide. You know, you've played before. You get it.
I understand the concept.
So Anissa said, well, a great spot for you to hide would be like right on the ground there. If you just lay down and cover yourself with leaves and branches and...
For sure, for sure. I love guerrilla warfare, hide and seek.
Yep.
What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Peyton listened. She lay down, she covered herself with leaves, and she tried to make herself hidden. And then out of nowhere, Peyton looked up to see Morgan, the seeker. So maybe, perhaps she was found. But then she also sees that Morgan is holding a 5-inch blade.
Huh?
Morgan then began stabbing Peyton.
Holy shit.
Anissa watched as Morgan stabbed Peyton 19 times.
19?
19 times. As Peyton lay bleeding in shock and unable to move, they told her they were leaving to go find help so that she should stay there. But of course they never would, and they didn't.
Oh my God.
Instead, Morgan and Anissa began a trek to the supposed Slenderman mansion, which was hundreds of miles away.
What?
What they didn't know was that Peyton is a badass.
Love that.
Suffering from the stab wounds they inflicted, she knew that they weren't going to go for help like they said. That didn't make a whole lot of sense. Why would you stab me 19 times and say, no, no, stay there. I will get help.
Hold on.
I don't think so.
Oh, no. Are you okay?
Peyton knew that if she was going to live, it was going to be because she did something.
Ugh.
She got herself up and she just started walking until she couldn't anymore.
Oh, my God.
And she ended up stopping in this like field, like this open area of grass. And thankfully, a cyclist was riding by and saw this blood-covered baby. Like, she's 12 years old.
12.
And called for help. So Peyton was rushed into surgery, but she was able to first tell police who attacked her.
Good.
And she said it was Morgan Geyser. Morgan and Anissa were found something like 5 miles away.
Wow, they trekked.
They did. They still had a bloody knife on them. So it was pretty obvious that it was them. They had it in one of their bags.
Yeah.
And they were taken in for questioning. Oddly enough, they didn't deny it. They didn't say, oh, it wasn't me or it wasn't us or anything. But Anissa seemed to blame Morgan a bit more for it. And Morgan just had like a flat affect about the entire thing.
Mm.
They both said they believed they were serving Slenderman as his proxies and that they had to sacrifice Peyton to him. They both felt that if they didn't kill Peyton, that their families would be killed. So it was either kill her or risk everyone else getting hurt. And that's what they had to do. But they also wanted to join him. And they felt like a sacrifice needed to be made to him.
Okay.
You know, this online Photoshop award winning creature.
Yeah.
They really bought into that. So, as they're talking to these girls, Morgan displayed no remorse.
Mm-hmm.
She said she felt nothing and wasn't sorry. Pretty candid about it.
Okay.
She said that she didn't want to kill Peyton. Like, she didn't say, oh, I want her to die. I hate her or anything like that. It was just that she felt like she had to and she was going to do what she had to do.
Right.
But it wasn't out of, like, hatred or rage toward Peyton, which is almost worse.
Yeah.
Because like I can understand rage attacking more than I can understand, well, it's a sacrifice that needed to be done.
Yeah, I think the apathy is more flippant and, like, careless with your clearly old good friend's life.
Exactly.
Versus, like, I hate you and sort of that act of passion.
Mm-hmm.
That even in the courts tends to get charges dropped down a severity level.
Exactly.
So.
It's just, it's nutty. It's all insane and it gets worse.
Oh.
Anissa appeared like she felt guilty. Like she did feel some kind of remorse, but again, believed it was necessary. Anissa wasn't denying it and didn't really seem like if she could go back, she wouldn't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Anissa said Morgan said to Peyton before the attack, "Don't be afraid. I'm only a little kitty cat."
Oh.
And then started stabbing her. So as she's standing over her with the blade, said, "Don't be afraid. I'm only a little kitty cat," proceeded to stab her 19 times.
See, and now look, this might get me in trouble.
Let's hear it.
That's why she's the weird kid. We know that, right?
Yeah. No, I don't think the question is how did she become that? What other things might she have done that led people to believe that that something wasn't right here?
Plenty of people who are quiet, who stick to their friend groups, mm-hmm. who don't have a ton of friends but have a few really good friends, and they're fine. But I'm just a little kitty cat. Meow.
Don't be afraid because I'm only a little kitty cat, but I don't know any knife wielding kitty cats.
Well, my cat's got a few on the end of his paws, but
I mean, hell,
even he, who is notably and infamously a terror, has never stabbed me 19 times.
Oh, and we did get a request for this. So I will 5 inches or 12.7 centimeters.
Oh,
for the visual, the metric system.
You mean for the length
for
of the knife?
For the length of the blade.
Okay.
So this 5-inch, 12.7 centimeter blade is what stabbed her and it went all the way in.
Oh my God, 19 times. That is normally such overkill.
Yes. And just to be told that beforehand, and let's not forget that one of the things that Morgan and Peyton bonded over when they first met when they were in the fourth grade was that they loved cats. So, not that I think that Morgan had the forethought or even the intention of, like, using something that Peyton liked against her to, like, terrify her.
But still.
But it still worked against her and terrified her as something that was something that she enjoyed and liked. And then you just pretended that you were a cat, a stabbing cat?
Yeah.
Not a tabby cat, stabby cat.
Oh, no.
Did I just make a dad joke?
You did. And you're rubbing off on me. I am disturbed enough that I didn't even congratulate you. But could we just hold for applause? Okay, thank you, Dad. Keep going.
Asshole. She said that Peyton cried out in agony during the attack. So Anissa is witnessing this.
Right.
She's not doing anything to stop it. In fact, she is encouraging it.
Right.
When Peyton made it to the hospital, they found that she had suffered stab wounds to her arms, legs, and torso. Her stomach and liver were stabbed in the attack. So she had organ damage. But she was lucky. One of the stab wounds was just a millimeter away from a major artery that would have absolutely resulted in her death.
Oh, my word.
So they said, like, the width of a human hair difference is what saved her life.
That is incredible luck.
And it is only luck because it wasn't that Morgan or Anissa were showing her mercy or didn't want her to die. The intent here was that she should have died.
Right.
And had circumstances been different in, like, the knife being in a different way, different direction, or a little bit over or deeper, or she laid there and listened to them and trusted that they were looking for help, Peyton would not have survived this.
Right.
And if we need something to hold on to at this point, Peyton does survive this.
And that is all on her. That is just her due to her
resilience,
her intuition, and trusting that and saying no,
and her desire to live.
Yeah,
which is very powerful. And so throughout this and in the days, weeks, and months after the attack, some information came out and I want to talk about it.
Okay.
In late 2013, early 2014, Morgan and Anissa hatched this plan to kill Peyton for Slenderman.
Wow.
So this attack happened the end of May 2014, as early as December 2013. So
for months.
Yeah, so about 5 or 6 months, this was in the works.
And when you're 12.
That feels like forever.
That's a lot.
Morgan and Anissa, from what I could put together, did not want to do this for jealousy or petty drama, because again, this is the time where they're getting very close and Peyton is making other friends. And so you might assume that it was because Peyton became, I don't know, call it more popular, more social, more accepted, whatever right. You want, fill in the blank. You might assume that this rage could have come from that, but it wasn't. Morgan and Anissa were entirely in their own little world. I don't think that they noticed that Peyton had that wedge with them. They just decided that she was the victim of this because she didn't believe what they were believing in and she didn't buy into it. And maybe if she had, maybe they would have chosen somebody else. I don't know. Wow. We don't know. But I don't think it was for any of the reasons that you might assume.
Right. Not the typical adolescent fueled.
Yeah, that coming dynamics. Of age hormonal drama. Fighting, petty, mean girl shit.
Right.
Shockingly, that did not appear to play a role in this, which is, again, what I would have thought if you told me that two 12-year-olds attacked another one.
Right.
Morgan was battling significant mental health issues, and Anissa's parents had recently gone through a divorce. So Anissa had found comfort in the creepypasta wiki, learning about horror, legends, creepy stories. She turned Morgan onto it, and then the two bonded.
Okay.
After school on Friday, so the day before the attack, Morgan and Anissa went to Anissa's house, where Anissa packed a bag with some clothes, some snacks, and a photo of her parents so she wouldn't forget what they looked like.
Oh.
She had no intention of returning home. Then they went with Morgan's dad to pick up Peyton, I believe from her house, where they were then dropped off to go roller skating and then back to Morgan's house. The next day, they went to the park. The girls planned to kill Peyton that weekend, and they had prepared for it. At first, the plan was to duct tape Peyton's mouth while she slept and stab her in her sleep, and then pull the blankets over her so it would look like she was sleeping, and that they would escape in the night. So they'd get a head start to Slenderman's mansion before anybody knew Peyton was dead. But they were going to kill Peyton in Morgan's house. So in theory, Morgan's mother would have to find a dead 12-year-old and her daughter nowhere to be found.
Cool.
But then they thought, best to not. Then during the walk to the park, they had Peyton walk a little bit ahead, which is also just like that 2 versus 1 thing where it's like one person, you know, two are always walking together. One's either behind or in front.
Yep.
Hate that shit. So they had Peyton walk a little bit ahead and Morgan showed Anissa the knife that she had in her bag. Like, it's happening. This, like, we're doing it today.
Got it.
Because they had kind of toyed with the idea the night before. They knew that they wanted to do it. Now they're doing it. I bring this up because this is so incredibly premeditated.
Yeah.
That I don't want anyone to think, oh, well, she just had a blade and it was like a break or a I don't know, an episode of anything. This was so planned and it was mental illness that got us here, but it wasn't like an unexpected episode that caused this.
Right.
This was so incredibly planned and prepared for. Once they got there, they were going to kill her in the bathroom. Anissa either had been to this park before or had scoped it out for this reason, but she did remember that there was a drain in the floor and she figured the blood could drain into that and that would help with their mess. But when they tried, Morgan had an episode. Anissa tried to stun Peyton by hitting her head and hopefully that would kind of disarm her a little bit. But after Anissa hit her head, Morgan, instead of stabbing her, like as was the plan, she started singing and talking to herself. So then Anissa was like, Peyton, go check on Morgan.
Got it. And go to her.
Yeah, Peyton's like, well, I probably have a brain injury now, but sure.
Can someone check on me?
Right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Morgan had to be pet like a cat to calm down.
Oh.
So it was like several attempts that Peyton didn't know of. Like how close she came to death all of those times leading up to this.
Wow.
So during hide and seek, Morgan gave Anissa the knife. But Anissa said, I'm too squeamish, and gave it back.
Okay.
So initially, Morgan was like, you kill her.
Wow.
And then Anissa was like, no, you kill her. And Morgan's like, all right, I'll kill her.
Jeez.
But she was waiting on Anissa's go-ahead. Like, Morgan wasn't going to do it unless Anissa gave her permission to, which was odd, because I don't really think that either one of them is more dominant than the other, but they're so, like, codependent that they can't do it without the other.
Yeah.
So Morgan was willing to do it, but Anissa had to tell her when. And Anissa backed away from Peyton on the ground. Peyton unknowingly that this did not know this was going to happen. And she told her, quote, go ballistic, go crazy. And then that's when Morgan started stabbing Peyton.
Cool, 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 cool.
When Morgan was done, Peyton tried to get up, but she said that she couldn't walk, she couldn't see, and she couldn't breathe. Again, 19 stab wounds. 2 of her organs pierced.
One very close to death. Width away.
Yes. And they told her, don't move. If you try to get up and move around, you're going to lose more blood. So they told her, we'll go get help. But they didn't intend to get her help. They just didn't want her drawing attention to herself because there could have been other people at that park.
Right.
And they knew that if anyone saw a bloody 12-year-old, that somebody would call for help and then they couldn't be Slenderman's proxies.
Oh, womp womp.
And they couldn't have their plan ruined. So they said, you stay there. We'll go get help. And then after they were gone, Peyton said, they're not coming back. No one's coming for me. So she knew. She knew that she had to be what saved her. While Morgan and Anissa were interviewed, they seemed so casual and unbothered. Morgan's shirt was still blood-soaked in this interview room. And when left alone in the room, she started singing to herself and she danced around the room as if she was there, like just for any other meeting. Like she just, there was no connection between what she did or no care between what she did and why she was there and the way that she behaved.
Wow.
Like she fully danced, she sang, she talked to herself.
Wow.
She flitted and flurried around the room when she was alone. And this is all recorded. You can see all of this. As I was researching, the emphasis was on their age, of course. in right. every source and everything. It was like, how did 12-year-olds, kids, babies, how did they do this? Because they were so young to not only plan this crime, but to do it. And to plan it was so brutal in the first place. But then I watched their interrogation interviews and I just thought, oh my God, they are so young. Their voices are so young, so juvenile. They are 12. And not only that, Morgan and Anissa were a young 12.
Right.
And it was so haunting to hear their voices and see their young faces and hear them talk about what they did.
Yeah.
Like it didn't compute. The juxtaposition of that voice and what happened and them talking about it, just, it's so haunting to hear.
Right.
And in all the sources you read about the age, but when you see it, it's just different. So I would encourage you to look into that if you are interested in that.
Right.
When Morgan was asked if she felt remorse for what she did, she said, quote, "I thought about it, but then I decided that remorse would get me nowhere. It's easier to live without regrets."
Huh?
I'm like, what? That YOLO mentality was like, it's buy one, get one free. Sure, I could have another one. Like, or like, do I want a coffee today? YOLO. Screw it. I'm not going to live without regrets.
Or like, hey, I want to go somewhere, but traveling seems scary.
But you know what? It's best to not be held down by regrets. Let's do it. Not attempted murder. That is not where that comes in. So she just said, I thought about feeling remorse, but then I just said, nay, nay.
Not for I.
I disagree.
Holy shit.
The surgeons who operated on Peyton just said that the stab wounds to her chest were so risky that had the one in her chest been a millimeter over or deeper, she would have died. She would have bled out immediately there. She was so incredibly lucky to be alive that the circumstances had to happen as they did.
Right.
For her to be there.
Right.
And it just so happened that they did.
Oh.
So it was very obvious that Morgan and Anissa were the culprits behind this, that nobody else was involved. So I want to talk a little bit about the sentencing.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot after this initial sentencing to get into, but how it started was Morgan Geiser was charged with attempted first-degree homicide.
Okay.
She pled guilty, but was found not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, which is not uncommon.
Right.
So she was found not guilty because of that, but her plea of guilty was entered and she received a 40-year sentence in a psychiatric facility.
Wow.
So she will be in her 50s.
Good.
When she is released, according to this initial sentencing.
Ugh.
Morgan was diagnosed as early onset schizophrenic, which is incredibly rare and typically frowned upon given that she was only 12. That is an incredibly young age for such a grown-up diagnosis.
Yeah.
And it's not often given to juveniles. However, she was also diagnosed with other disorders as well. And it did come out that her father had also struggled with schizophrenia. So the diagnosis was due in part because of that family history.
Right.
And that he had initially been diagnosed with early onset schizophrenia and then in adulthood at the appropriate age was diagnosed with schizophrenia. So what she sort of displayed for behaviors and the hallucinations and this like kind of break from reality coupled with the family history made it pretty certain that this was her diagnosis.
Well, this is a pretty typical presentation of it as well. Not the attempted murder, that's not so common, but
the mix of reality and not reality.
The delusions that are happening. If you guys ever get a chance, I would recommend looking up interviews with patients who have schizophrenia. You can see a lot of these common symptoms sort of portrayed in the different kinds of delusions people can have. Like, I mean, there's all sorts of them, right? People who think that celebrities are in love with them or sending them secret messages by like blinking twice during an interview or, you know, like Taylor Swift put a picture or an emoji of like a purple heart up and they're like, that's my sign. I have to do this thing. So there's all sorts of these common tropes within these symptoms, but these symptoms are pretty common. I think my concern or the thing that I would be more surprised at is the early onset. I mean, so many people don't start showing symptoms till their 20s or 30s. Mm-hmm. So 12 is really young.
12 is really young, especially the fact that to get this diagnosis, there was a history before that.
Correct.
So we're talking earlier than 12 years old to start presenting symptoms.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly rare.
It is. But also with the family history and her personal history and this incident, it makes complete sense. No doubt in my mind.
Because we're going to talk a lot more about it.
Okay.
An expert testified that at the time of the crime, Morgan was diagnosed with unspecified schizophrenia and other psychotic disorders and experienced trauma during the commission of the crime.
Oh, okay.
Which to me was odd because I'm like, do you think that she had those diagnoses and she had experienced trauma at the time of the crime? Or are you saying that that trauma was...
Due to the commission of the crime?
That trauma happened during the crime, and that was something that I couldn't piece out because to me it was almost worded as if the her commission of the crime was traumatic for her, which is like, no shit, I'd argue it's more traumatic for Peyton, but okay.
I could understand a world in which both were true. However, it is curious to me during sentencing to say, but hey, that hurt her mental health.
If we're going to consider the definition of trauma being the perception that your life is in danger, that you or somebody you love, right, being killed or maimed or in any way, you know, things drastic and dangerous, then if you also believe that Slenderman will kill you and your family if you don't do this,
right,
that seems like you got to stretch for that reach. But I do think that you'd reach for it if you were her defense team.
Yeah. I also could see, though, if you genuinely are having these delusions and you generally believe that someone is going to harm you and your family if you don't kill someone, that's duress. That's stressful. Is it real duress? Is it?
No.
Does it make you not criminally liable? No. It makes your mental health the creator of that duress.
Right. And then I think it becomes really difficult if that precedent is set, how many people would say, well, I thought this was going to happen if I didn't kill my ex because you cheated on me. So I had, you know what I mean? Like, I don't foresee that working, but I could see people like trying to hop on a bandwagon.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating because mental health needs to be looked at a lot more seriously than just that.
Well, that and also, I mean, we would just add to more stats that say most people don't succeed in the not guilty by reason of insanity plea.
Right. So this is kind of all at play here. Morgan attempted suicide in 2021.
That's awful.
While she was in the facility. And if she's released, given these current sentences, she will be required to be under supervision until she's in her 50s.
Okay.
Anissa was charged with attempted second-degree homicide, and a jury found her not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, and she was sentenced to 25 years to life, which required her to complete a mandatory 3-year inpatient sentence at a psychiatric facility and then be on supervision until she is at least 37 years old.
I'm so sorry. Three?
Three.
Okay.
She did do longer, but the mandatory inpatient was 3. But in 2021, Anissa petitioned for her release, reading a statement that she was, quote, sorry and deeply regretful for the agony, pain, and fear that she's caused.
Okay.
Then she also said that she was sorry not just to Peyton, but to her whole community. And she said, quote, I hate my actions from May 31st, 2014, but through countless hours of therapy, I no longer hate myself for them. She was released from custody in 2021. She was placed on 24/7 electronic monitoring, so she had an ankle bracelet on, and she had to notify authorities if and when she was leaving the county. I think she had to ask permission first and then let them know. But this electronic monitoring was removed 2 years later in 2023. So she is now just court ordered to take psychiatric medication, and she does have a caseworker that brings her to and from mandatory counseling appointments. But she is currently living with her dad. She is ordered to live there, but she is free from those higher levels of supervision. And now mm-hmm. she is just essentially ordered outpatient treatment.
Okay.
So she is out. She is living. Okay. She's also not allowed to have any social media accounts, preferably of the horror genre of okay. looking at anything like that. And she does have limited internet access. So they're really trying to push her away from the world wide web, if you will.
I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Or Morgan has petitioned for release 3 times.
Oh, the queen.
She retracted her first petition and she was denied in the other two. She is currently at the Winnebago Mental Health Institute in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where she has been since 2018. Now, I watched some of Dr. Collins' testimony where Morgan was trying to get out. So Dr. Collins was a professional who was working with Morgan since she's been in the facility. So I think on and off from 2014.
Okay.
And Dr. Collins testified in this hearing where Morgan is trying to get out. And she believes that Morgan should not yet be released. Now, this, I believe... this was posted to Law and Crime about 8 months ago. I don't recall it when this testimony took place. I don't know if this is the most recent of her attempts to be released and from this testimony, but just to include some of what has come out since then, I did not really read anybody else talking about this.
Okay.
So I wanted to include this. So Dr. Collins cited a few things. First, the unsettling comments made. So Morgan has made unsettling comments.
Yeah.
Since she's been in treatment, and she has engaged in several self-injurious behaviors, which was concerning for her to be released.
Yeah.
For example, there was an instance where Morgan swallowed batteries, and another instance, as I mentioned before, where she tried to take her own life.
Mm-hmm.
This next part was new to me, though, and I only ever heard it in Dr. Collins' testimony regarding, again, this petition for her to be released. But it was included that Morgan reported she was sexually abused by her dad almost all of her childhood.
Oh.
That she would sleep on the floor because she knew her dad couldn't get down to the floor. But if asked, she would say that she was sleeping there to get closer to her guinea pigs. That must have been like where their cage was. She said that he watched her shower, that he was often high or drunk. She told her mom, but her mom didn't do anything. She was usually at work. And if this is true, it adds a whole other layer to the mental health and trauma piece that we're talking about.
Right.
That not only was her dad similarly struggling with schizophrenia, but that he was using substances and sexually abusing her. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
I am in no way defending either of their actions. Let me be clear. I know that you guys know well enough to know that we are not vilifying people with mental illness, but we are responsible for our actions and what we do about what we've got to work with. We got to play the cards we're dealt.
Yep. And we are the only ones who can do anything about what we have going on.
Correct. But Dr. Collins believes that there will be a time where she anticipates Morgan's progress will reach a point that she will be healthy enough to be eligible for conditional release, but that she's not there yet.
Okay.
But this abuse matters here.
A lot.
Which is why I say if true, because it didn't come out in anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, it does not mean it didn't happen. It does not mean that her dad couldn't be a monster. It doesn't mean that Morgan isn't telling the truth, but it is also important to add that Morgan historically, while she's been in treatment, has been not entirely honest.
Okay.
And so it makes believing her and what parts of what she says, determining what is true, very difficult.
Right.
Another professional testified regarding Morgan's hallucinations.
Okay.
And said that Morgan had said once over the age of 18 that she actually never recalled having hallucinations before, but that she instead pretended to so that she would be in a psychiatric facility, which would spare her from having to go home to her abusive dad.
Interesting.
So she's claiming that, oh, you've diagnosed me with like this schizophrenia and all of this, but actually I was lying about the ways I fit that diagnosis because I wanted to be in a facility. I didn't want to go home.
Okay.
But then once she turned 18, she said that that wasn't true because even if she were released, she wouldn't have to go home because she wouldn't be underage anymore.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So now she wouldn't be required to be around him. She ultimately decided to come clean. But what was most concerning was the stark contradiction between her self-report that she didn't and hasn't experienced hallucinations, yet there are thousands upon thousands of pages in her mental health record that state the opposite.
Yeah.
So essentially, how are we to believe her? Is she an accurate historian of what she's been dealing with? And on top of that, even if she could be an accurate historian, how honest is she? Which is
there's a lot
challenging. There's a lot there. I'm glad I don't have to be the one to make those decisions. But it's either, from what I can put together, it seems like she's saying she played the long game and like for years and years and years said that she had that, which I don't think would be... I don't think is likely, but I also don't discount that if this girl experienced that trauma and was like looking for a way out, and maybe Slenderman and going to him and living there and being one of his proxies sounded a whole hell of a lot better than being home with her abusive dad. That could have been an escape in its own right.
I struggled to believe that she had that wherewithal in her that entire time.
Exactly.
That being said, I think those reports of her history coming out paired with her non-suicidal self-injurious behavior paired with the suicide attempt, I think there's a lot at play, and I don't doubt that she was struggling with something at home at all. I mean, I'm not saying it is what she said it was. I'm not saying it's not. I tend to err on the side of believing victims when they report victimizations. Yep. That doesn't mean that she should be out of responsibility or accountability for what she's done, or that she should be out of state supervision for those things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We know what she's capable of. Regardless of that motive, it doesn't seem like that progress has been made to the point where someone could ultimately say she is not a risk to herself or others. And I think if she could even harm herself, even if she wouldn't hurt anybody else and she'd only hurt herself, that is not a reason. I don't know if they're pointing to that, but that does not mean that she should be let out. Right. She needs to be safe too.
Yeah. Yeah. You still can't release somebody if they're a danger to themselves.
No.
And not other people.
And the fact that she is still in that kind of pain, like she needs more.
Yeah.
But there is actually a push to have her released as soon as possible. There's actually a website dedicated to like her story and what is going on and that push. And while I understand part of it, I still think that first of all, you have to answer to what you've done. And I don't think prison was the place for her at all.
Right.
But if she were charged as a child, she would have been out long ago. Because they would have been really limited in what her sentencing could have been.
Right.
So I think charging her as an adult to get her the help that she needs was smart. But I don't think that, like, punitive was going to change it. It depends. Do you want to choose a punishment or do you want to rehabilitate? Like, you got to choose the goal here. Because if the goal is to make her better, then she needs the treatment.
I think there comes a lot of responsibility for the state and the corrections facility then, if you do decide to go punitive with a 12-year-old who attempted to harm someone else as a result of really intense, severe mental illness. There is a lot of areas that can go wrong. And I think it is almost so many areas that is bound to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I would be floored if they were able to do that and it went off without a hitch and it went perfectly and she said, oh, that wasn't right and I need to do this for myself, because clearly there is enough of a detachment from reality from her symptoms that I don't think she would have had the logic or the wherewithal to get from A to B if they had chosen that route.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
There is still that push because they're stating that she's no longer a threat to the public and that she's properly medicated now. And that she is getting treatment, which I think can be great. Let's see that sustained for a little bit longer, in my opinion. I mean, again, she was sentenced to that 40 years, so she'll be under some kind of supervision until she's in her 50s. But I also know that supervision beyond a facility can be spotty at best.
Yeah,
I think that caseloads can be really high. I think people can be overworked, under allocated. And people can slip through the cracks.
often, and especially if you're doing the bare minimum, and the people who are doing your supervision can say, okay, I'm getting a report once a month, we're fine.
Right.
Right.
Where it does matter. So we'll see where that goes. That is the most recent update that I have, that she's still trying to get out. It seems like these things keep getting delayed, but the people that are working with her are saying, not yet. Not which yet. To me, that is who you believe.
Especially with the level of supervision she has, the fact that she's in a facility, they have eyes on her, if not 24/7, as close to that as you can. She's working with people, she's medicated, and she's still experiencing these symptoms. I mean, I'm not saying she will ever be cured of her mental health. That is not one that I know of that has a cure.
Mm-hmm.
However,
but it can be properly treated, where you can have a typical pro-social happy life.
Right. It can be managed. It can be handled to the place where she is okay to be released. But if we are still at a place, and I know this was a few years ago, and I struggled to highlight this as evidence that she's not ready, because I think a lot of people who have had attempts on their own life, it becomes a whole new ball game to try to have anything done for your health and mental health after that. But
if we're still at a place, 5 years into treatment, we're doing that, I think we need more.
Well, yeah. And also, you know, consider developmental wise, right? Like, she is not yet at a place where her brain is developed.
Mm-hmm.
We are not obligated to wait that long. But I would say if we're still struggling with the impulsivity of this, with the symptoms of the mental health, and we are in a place where 24/7, the entire goal is to help, and we're still not there, that we clearly have more. And I am someone who, God, insurance companies would hate to see me coming. They'd be shaking in their boots, because I'd rather see her well and stable for a period of time before we release, not just get to a place where we're saying, okay, she's doing well now.
Mm-hmm.
Because where she'd be doing well is in a place where there are four walls around her, where everybody in there and everybody who works there knows her and is oriented towards the goal of seeing her well and happy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are just starting to do well at a place where that is the entire goal, that is the entire vision, we can't remove you from that setting, put you back into the public where, not for nothing, nor should it be, nobody else really gives a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's doing their own thing. Nobody cares how that's triggering you. Nobody cares how that's impacting your mental health. They don't care about your trauma. People in general do not have to be trauma oriented. They don't have to be trauma informed. They don't care.
There's also that, like, for lack of a better term, I don't mean like glorifying it, but like the legacy, like the history there.
Right.
When she gets out and she has to stay local, it's going to be like, hey, there's that girl that tried to kill that other girl.
And then later herself. Like, that's and going to impact things.
How does that not trigger something? Like, or if it does, how equipped is she to deal with that and cope with that? That she is going to come out to scrutiny, where right now she is probably very well shielded.
Well, maybe. I don't know who else is in there, but at least with anybody else who's in there, she has tons of professionals that are working there that are also there to see her do better.
Right. But like around the clock people there, right, are there versus like people throwing eggs at her house. Like, there's,
yeah,
there is a difference there. And where she'd get out, she doesn't want to go with dad. That sounds like a good idea no matter what.
Yep. Correct.
So
I agree.
So then where? Because Anissa went home to family.
Yeah.
So that's a whole thing.
Well, and I would also venture to say that, like, I would love to see her do well enough that she could get out. But as someone who often points out, we are a criminal justice system, not a victim justice system. What does Peyton want? Peyton in all this?
We're going to talk about Peyton in a little bit.
Love that.
So let's talk about some, like, takeaways.
Okay.
I'll share a little bit of mine. We want to hear yours. And then we'll talk about the aftermath and where Peyton is now.
Perfect.
Or at least as of most recent update.
Yeah, of course.
So, in my opinion, this case calls a lot of attention to a few things. First, my goodness, can we be mean to each other?
Shit, yeah.
Second, mental illness in children should be taken very seriously. Doesn't seem that it is. We have, in my opinion, Allie's opinion, a mental health crisis in our country. Youth are exposed to too much, too young, and genetic and environmental factors haven't been either researched enough or the research has been buried. But there is something more going on here. Yeah. And we have more youth mental health struggles now than we ever have, or at least we're talking about it perhaps more than we ever did, but it's still a lot. And I think that social media and the internet and access to information, and whether that's true or false, a lot of that at a very young age can be difficult. I'm not saying that I think anyone other than the parents should come in and decide what that should be, but leads me to my next point, which is she had a lot of time as an incredibly young and ill girl on the internet unsupervised.
Yep.
Where she could find and foster this obsession.
Yeah.
And it was not noted by anybody. And then Anissa could do the same thing. And then that bond and that sort of like trauma bond sisterhood formed, mm-hmm. where it was them against the whole world. And I think that, like, had someone been paying attention, or the school or the parents or something, that doesn't mean it would have avoided this. It's not that I blame them. But I think if we're trying to look for things we could learn here, it's that, first of all, my kid's not going to have unrestricted access to the internet. And I'd encourage you to consider that, too. Which, again, leads me to my third point, the internet. I am all for the freedom to draw, create, edit, write, and or say what you want, be creative, even if, or especially if, I disagree with it. It's not up to me to decide what you get to do with your life, girlfriend. More power to you. But we do have to take notice of who is consuming this. These girls were ill, but these girls bought into something they thought was real and then tried to sacrifice their friend to this entity that doesn't even exist. Parents, watch your damn kids. I'm not blaming the parents here, and I don't believe that this is inherently their fault or anyone's fault. I think there are so many layers to all of this, but we didn't know what we know now, but that's just it. We do know now. Take an interest in their day, their friends, how they're spending time outside of school. The world and the internet can be a really scary place, and it's the parents' job to protect them from that.
Right.
As for Peyton, she lives with the physical and emotional scars of what happened to her, and for a while after this, she slept with broken scissors under her pillow.
Oh, girl.
She just slept in fear. But she is so, so brave and so resilient. Peyton believes what she experienced plays a large part in who she is today, and she's grateful for it. In an interview with ABC, she said of the attack, "I didn't feel anything because my body was in shock. I got up and just walked until I hit a patch of grass where I could lay down. I shouldn't be alive. I really shouldn't be after what happened."
Yeah.
And she's right. By all intents and purposes, she should have died that day given her injuries, but because of her actions, she did not. And I think that that gave her a renewed look at life. And I'm sure she's not, it's hard to say that, I don't think she's thrilled that it happened. I don't mean it that way, but she's grateful that this experience has changed her life in a way that she feels she can be more meaningful and intentional with her life.
Right.
And one thing that she said was that she really feels for Morgan's mom, Angie.
Okay.
Which was very interesting. She said that she thinks of her often and hopes that she's doing okay. She knows that Angie couldn't have done anything to stop it and couldn't have known. Angie was who allowed them to go to the park that day, who stayed there, yeah. Morgan's mom. So it was good to hear that she doesn't blame her. But she feels that she has a clearer path in life now from what she's experienced, and she's thankful to be alive. The last update I read about Peyton was that she was a sophomore in college in 2021 and she was working part-time. I didn't try to find out more about where she is now because I think she is an amazingly brave young woman who can probably overcome anything, but I also think that she deserves to live how she wants to now.
Yeah.
And if that was the last update she was comfortable giving, then that is where I will leave it. What she endured is unimaginable, and Peyton should have never had to go through it, but she's alive because of her perseverance, not because she was shown mercy. Her case also tells another story of childhood mental illness and unmonitored and unsupervised internet activity where missing social marks were either unnoticed or alarm bells did not ring, which resulted in two kids falling through the cracks.
And she paid the price for that.
She did. And yeah. she paid a hefty one. And I just think this case is not like, oh, it's just mental illness. Oh, it's just the internet. Oh, it's just the parents. Oh, it's like, there are so many layers here. And there's so much that we don't know for a fact. Like, I would right. want to know so much more about Morgan's treatment.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about much of this. And I have not wanted to super interject for fear of missing context or nuance. I think it's fascinating that Anissa got out as early as she did.
I was blown away by that and off the monitoring as quickly as she was. 2 years.
I am hopeful and cautiously optimistic that the providers and the monitoring professionals that are at play here are on top of their game and know what they're doing. I know she is not the one that, in fact, completed the stabbing. I know she is one that refused to do it. She is also part of the catalyst for how this happened, though, and I would not take that lightly.
She also told her to do it. She was just squeamish and didn't want to be around the blood.
That's what I mean.
Like that, you know.
And I appreciate that they're trying to limit internet access, that they're trying to limit social media accounts. But if there's one thing I know from Instagram, babe, it's a spam account. Mm-hmm. And also, it's real easy to quote unquote limit things for the devices that you know about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'll say on that. I hope she's doing okay. I hope she continues to do well and as she needs to. And I hope that in the event she gets any more of these plans or ideas that she says, hey, this didn't go so great last time. Let me tell somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That would help, not would help further the plan.
Correct.
As far as Morgan, well, that's a whole can of worms, huh? There's a lot going on. I'm glad that she is still in treatment. I am so hopeful that she remains in treatment long after she feels she's ready to go home, until she is so confident she's ready to go home that the entire place is like, why is she still here? We're running out of treatment plan ideas for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want. I want it to be so beyond over-treatment or over-treated that they're like, we're struggling to come up with concepts for our sessions right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be a long time. I know that it is hard to be in a setting like that for a long time. I don't know what options there would be for steps down later on in her treatment, but it seems to me that this is not the time for that.
It seems as of that last update that if the treatment providers weren't enthusiastically like, yes,
it's a
then,
no.
Then for me personally, in this instance, it's a no. There's just too much at play. She was traumatized and dealing with things that no child should have to deal with.
Right.
And the mental health are things that no child should ever have to deal with. And whether she believes she deserves or is in need of that treatment and support, I think that it could not possibly be a bad idea. And also, she was sentenced to 40 years.
Yep.
So this push after what feels like, you know, what is it, eight? Six years?
Yeah, something like that.
After everything was all said and done, it just seems like, give it more time.
Let's at least get a quarter of our sentence in there, huh?
Like, let's do...
At least. I would hope for half.
Like, let's be sure. Let's be really sure.
And again, I'm not saying that all has to be in, you know, level 5 care. You know what I mean? You can do step down, whatever. But we, I believe, should be in care for quite some time. I also think that if it hasn't already happened, we need to be taking these allegations seriously of what was happening at home. And maybe some investigating into that would be beneficial. Because if nothing else, it would tell us a lot about where her mental health is currently. If this is happening, we should be maybe looking at other pieces of treatment to be pulling in, and maybe dad should be held liable for some of those things before a statute of limitations runs up.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if not, clearly something is still going wrong and we need to be looking at those elements of treatment, because I know a lot of people have a lot of negative stigma around saying someone might be doing or saying something for attention, but if they're is a need that's being so unmet they're willing to say or do these things for attention, that calls for attention to another area of concern. So
exactly.
I would implore someone to look into that a little more, if not, if that's not already happening. And also, I hope that she learns how to be kind to herself, because I think being kind to others starts with being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
And I am saddened and truly, honestly, kind of heartbroken to hear that she is still so self-loathing or has so much self-hatred or just apathy for herself that she is doing the things she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that they remain diligent and cognizant of all of the factors of what's happening here. And also, just because I have to, because it's me, really making sure that those meds are getting taken when they're being taken, and that we aren't doing anything to hide or pocket or gum or under the tongue, any of that. There's substance abuse in the family, or alleged. And so that is also, you know, a genetic piece to look at and be aware of.
Of course.
But in terms of anything else there, I'm going to trust the professionals that are willing to say, hey, we think someday, but not yet. I'll hold on to that. I like that there is hope for that future. And I hope that when she does get there, maybe she can do something with all of this pain she's gone through and is suffering with and dealing with now to help keep this from happening for someone else. And at the end of my soapbox, I would implore parents, like truly a call to action. Oh my good God, look at your kid's internet history. Look at parental controls. Look at those fucking texts. They're gonna hate it. They're gonna yell. They're gonna scream. They're gonna say, why don't you trust me? And you're gonna say, I trust you. I don't trust the other people. And that is fair and true. And I won't tell you how to parent. I don't have kids. But I do know what it was like to be an adolescent with unchecked internet history. And man, oh man, look at your kid's fucking internet history. I know there's so much in our life that as adults, as matured people with fully developed brains, we say, no, there's no way my kid would fall for that. They know that that's fake. They know that that is a dangerous thing. That's a red flag. They won't know until they get a little bit older, until those pieces of their brains develop. Most kids don't develop empathy until they're like 11. All right, empathy, that feels basic. You see someone outside in the cold during the winter, you're going, brr. You know, those kids aren't there yet.
Yep.
Until 11. And that's if they're mentally matured at the proper rate at that time during that year.
Exactly.
So like, we need to be cognizant of where our kids are when they're experiencing these things and how we let that impact our interpretation of how they're developing, because that is not something that's going to be innate to them, even if it is innate at a later date or a later age or to you.
Right.
And they're going to be mad, and that's okay, because
you're
a lot of-
You're not there to be their best friend. You're there to be their parent.
And to keep them safe. And you know what? Every kid I've ever met whose parents didn't have consequences, who didn't have rules, kind of secretly wanted them. I would rather know my mom cares enough to make my life a living hell because I can't text my best friend after 10:30 p.m. than my mom doesn't care what I do and won't notice if I don't come home. And that might feel like an extreme stretch, but to a lot of kids, it's not.
Also, if you're the parent that wants to be friends with your kid, first of all, don't, but I'll let you in on a trick. My parents were not my friends when I was growing up, and they're my friends now.
Yeah.
Because I'm an adult and I don't need them that way anymore, because I was raised well enough to take care of myself and be independent and not need for them in the way that a child needs for them. And now, in my old age of my 20s, I have a different relationship with them that is not like, you are strictly my parent.
Yeah.
Where I'm being raised. And you can have such a good relationship with your kids.
And I find it's better once, when there is that foundation of they care, they want me okay. I know their intentions are to see me happy, healthy, thriving, rather than to see me fulfill their needs, to see me fulfill their social needs, mm-hmm. or me keep them feel safe or good about themselves. There are so many things that by being adults and being responsible for ourselves and a child that we don't often think about, because maybe our needs are met by them in some ways and your needs are met. So why would you be thinking that they're not?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is also just another call to action of like, go to therapy, y'all. Even if you're having the best, even if your life is like the best, the worst case scenario is somebody else telling you that you're pretty and that you're having all of the right choices. And that can be really validating, because I don't know about you, but even in the best years of my life, it has been helpful for someone else to say, hey, I see you and this is going well.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need those outside perspectives. We live in our brains all day long. Nobody else does. So to have somebody else hear it and say, oh my gosh, thank goodness, things are going well. That's nice. And if not, like, yes, you can always take it with a grain of salt. It's somebody else. It might not be for you for a long time or long term. But especially when it comes to somebody else's well-being and their mental health and their mental development at that mm-hmm. age. Also, I have so much empathy for parents. Oh my good God. I don't know what I'd do if somebody needed me and like genuinely was dependent on me constantly 25/8. That sounds exhausting and stressful. And like, if you are lucky enough to have a partner in it that's as in it as you, another layer of dynamics to add on top of that, to just be like, hey, all of this is going on. And for someone else to be like, wow, this is all being handled so nice, would be such a relief, I think, for me personally.
I agree. And we're going to have some links included in our show notes that include some resources like 988 and some other ones that are for our U.S. listeners. But regardless, I'd encourage you to research your local ones. We give the national ones. From there, ideally, you get connected with local.
Yeah, the closer, the better. And just a reminder, anybody who has internet access, anybody who has Wi-Fi, anybody who has a cell phone carrier, if this is not innate to you, if you're not tech savvy, if you are still learning a lot of this, YouTube it, Google it, call your cell phone provider. They will almost all tell you ways that you can monitor the things that are being looked at or sent or received from your lines and internet.
Absolutely. So I'd like to hear from our listeners on what they think about this case. How do you feel about the sentencing? How do you feel about potential release? How do we feel about, you know, what can we do different? I guess we take every case of like, we put ourselves in the position of all involved and we consider what happens, but then we also think, okay, well, that this did happen and it shouldn't have. What can we do moving forward?
Right.
What can we learn? What can we take away? And I want to hear from our listeners. What did you take away from this case?
What do you think? Where are you at? Is there anything we missed? Let us know. If you wanted to look at the people, though, the places, the things, all of what we're talking about, get some of those sources, those resources, you can look down below in the show notes. There is all of the sources linked. And then if you click on our link tree, you can get access to our Instagram with more of those resources. You can get access to our email to send in questions, comments, pod pets, case recommendations, any of that stuff. And also there's our Redbubble, our PayPal, and our Venmo. If you wanted to contribute to the podcast or look at any merch, we would love to see you there in the next week before we come to you again with our next case. If I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodness. Bye.